Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
G'day and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the Doom Patrol podcast, where we're waiting for the Doom Patrol to come back. And we know when that is now, so that's even more exciting.
Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at avantgarve. You can reach us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com or on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio and podbean.com.
I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_hicks, and you can contact the Sentient Show Twitter account that we have called Wilfred at WFDpod.
Yes, and this week we're going to be looking at a single issue, number 46, from the middle of the Morrison and Case run, which has got some interesting stuff in it. But first, Paul, how's your week in comics and such been?
It's good, Mike. Yes, I've been reading old comics and very much enjoying them. So I've been making my way through Hawk and Dove, which might be in preparation for another podcast, maybe. But this is the Hawk and Dove series from the late 80s, and finding it pretty good, very strong stuff.
Who was the creative team on that one?
It was Carl and Barbara Kiesel.
Okay.
And they wrote it, and a lot of the art was done by Greg Gula. Hawk and Dove, it's... I think, anyway, I don't want to get too much into talking about it because it's for another show.
Right.
What show are you thinking? Oh. Yeah. Anyway, what about you, Mike? How's everything with you?
Yeah, reading the comics. I got more into my to-read pile, but with the four comics I'm getting this week, I'll be back up to about half a dozen in the to-read pile. So I'm almost there, almost finally conquered it. Then I've just got two trades to get through, and then I'll be caught up on everything.
It does sound much more manageable, but I must confess I've got quite a read pile going now. I've got about five trades that I haven't had time to get to. Mm-hmm. I've got tonight, before I got here, I was actually reading my Doom Patrol issue in the hall while everyone was watching the finale of some season of The Amazing Race.
Right.
So,
so the next task will then be bagging and boarding everything. And then, I've got two trades to get through and a stack of old Detective Comics waiting for me at some stage too, because that collection keeps growing. And also this past weekend, I actually guested on another podcast called Task Force X with Aaron Moss. And we were chatting all about the Suicide Squad and Doom Patrol crossover issue that we did a while back. But unsurprisingly, the Aaron show is all about the Suicide Squad and the shenanigans that they get up to. So that was a lot of fun chatting with him about that issue and sort of sharing the love and the knowledge of the Doom Patrol there. So I think that'll be out later this week, and we'll share links and whatnot once that goes to air. So,
Yeah, good old Aaron. He had Paul Kupperberg on his podcast not too long ago. Did you know that?
No, I did not. I delved back into a few episodes of his show, but didn't get back that far.
Yes, we should probably do that one day.
One day, yeah.
If he wants to.
Paul, if you're listening, get in touch, you know. Love to have you on. No pressure.
Oh, ticking.
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 Oh, jeez. The Doom clock's still kicking around. Well, check it out. Okay, so we're looking at the face of the mighty Doom clock, and no big surprise, the last issue of a Doom Patrol book we had was still issue 22 from volume 5, the Giffen Clark run, which was cover dated July 2011, went on sale May 4th of that same year, so it's 4 years and 50 weeks since the last book. Getting even closer to the five-year anniversary of that.
That's imminent.
Imminent. Very
imminent.
The last appearance of the team was about 8.5 months ago, 36 weeks in two different comics, All-Star Section 8, number 3, and Justice League United, number 12. But this week, in Doom Patrol history, on sale April 18, 1963, was My Greatest Adventure number 80, the very first appearance of the Doom Patrol.
Boom.
Yes, so happy birthday to the Patrol. And thanks to everyone who got involved with the Happy Birthday Doom Patrol hashtag on Twitter over the weekend. It was some interesting stuff there.
Yeah, some people did some original art. There was pictures of people's toys and comics and autographs and favorite pages and all sorts of things. Mm. Some bitch and tattoo.
I don't remember putting up a picture of my tattoo. Oh, no, wait. Your tattoo. God. Yeah. That looked painful, Paul.
Yeah, no, it was a bit of serious tattooing that I got done. Yeah.
Yeah. Was it like the trainee day there?
I haven't actually seen it. It's on the back of my
You've seen the
butt.
Picture though, surely.
No? Is there one?
You know there's one. Half of Twitter knows there's one.
Oh.
I'll send it to you later, you know.
Oh, thanks, mate.
Yeah. Not a problem. But yes, it was lots of fun seeing people take part and put up, you know, yeah, their favorite pics and shots of their collection. And I've even come across some just tonight. Someone, Reginaldo Yeoman, put up a picture of the Doom Patrol headshots with his choices for casting for a Doom Patrol film, which was cool. So lots of fun stuff on there. One from Ryan Daly, which I think he did himself with, you know, Happy Birthday Doom Patrol and the action figures there. So it was really cool. Thanks for taking part, guys.
Yeah. Will Feesh did his Smurf Doom Patrol art.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Bobgar Ornelas showed his Dupe Patrol artwork, which was very cool.
Very cool.
Look, even James, our silent partner, got involved and played a bit of a prank on us with his Doom 2099 comic. I just saw your tattoo again.
Kind of stays with you, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Even when I wasn't on Twitter, it stayed with me. Yes, happy 53rd birthday to the Patrol, and thanks to all the Patrollers for taking part and retweeting everyone's cool stuff online. It was really good fun.
Yes, it was. It was terrific.
Yes. Have to do it again next year. That's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Today on Doomsplaining, we're looking at Doom Patrol number 46 from Volume 2, which is the Grant Morrison Doom Patrol. It was cover dated August 1991, but it actually went on sale, according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, on the 25th of June 1991. Except in Australia, where it probably took a day or two longer. Are people tired of that joke yet?
I'm sure they'll let us know.
Loosely defined as a joke at this point. Anyway, cost $1.50, which is pretty good.
Pretty good.
Pretty good. Edited by Tom Payer, who writes comics these days. Mm. He did a really good run on Our Man. Anyway, I'm babbling at this point. Written by Grant Morrison, penciled by Richard Case, inked by Mark McKenna. The letterer was Gaspar Saladino. I think he's Chinese. And the colorist was Daniel Vozzo. And it had a really good cover by Simon Bisley, which shows a very cartoonish looking Crazy Jane leaning against a tree, surrounded by, like, there's a Cheshire cat in the tree, and there's a sort of demon and some sort of weird monster on the ground in front of her, and a pretty freaky looking horse in the background.
I'm wondering if that's a deformed rabbit in front of her.
I don't know. There's something wrapped in barbed wire in the background that we're not really sure what it is.
Hmm.
This comic serves as a bit of an afterword, a coda, an epilogue, if you will, to the previous arcs about the Men from Nowhere and the Pentagon Horror and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it opens with checking in with some of the survivors of that story. So we see Harry Christmas, and you remember that he, end of the story, he lost the ability to write coherently, which is a bit of a problem because he's an author. But in his little update, so the characters are sort of doing the updates directly to the reader as if it's a documentary. And he's saying that, you know, even though his writing is now scrambled, he's found his niche as a successful experimental narrative innovator. So he's having success. We see we catch up with the mother of Wallace Sage, who's you know, her son died, so she's at his graveyard and she's following his last wishes, which is releasing pigeons and no wind up birds and fireworks, and then she had the gardening tools wrapped in newspaper in my own idea. So a touching little graveyard memorial. Sergeant Washington has joined Peeping Tom's cabaret on Danny the Street.
Nice for him.
Yes. And he's got fishnets on. I wonder if Ryan Daly's caught up with that. Yes. And he's doing a stirring rendition of Goldfinger.
Yes.
And he's now known as Lovely Louisa Washington.
The Force's sweetheart. Please.
Goldfinger. He's a man, man with a Midas touch, a spider's touch. Such a cool finger.
We see Major Honey next. He was General Honey, so probably been demoted after what happened in the Pentagon. He's saying he's been talking to a psychiatrist now and decided that he's very well suited for running for president at this point. What? Can you imagine an asshole like that running for president?
Oh, jeez. You wouldn't want that in your worst nightmares.
Yeah. Sarah Furness, the traveller on Danny the Street, she's gone back home after all the excitement and she just wants to look after a garden and do some reading. So.
Yeah,
and she says to the camera, is that okay? After she does a little piece. And lastly, we check in with Flex Mentallo. I think, if I recall correctly, this is Flex leaving the comic for good at this point.
Okay.
I think
it probably is. I can't recall any further appearances of him.
Yeah, so he was the fictional superhero who became real. You know, real as in living in the DC universe at this point. But he's noticed that real superheroes are so miserable and depressed. Anyway, he said he's going to change that. He's going to put a smile on the face of the war against crime. So make way for America's merriest crime fighter. Flex Mentallo is here to stay. Drive carefully now.
I really hope Gerard Way keeps some of that sensibility about Flex in the upcoming run, you know, that he's just a good old guy and he wants everyone to be happy whilst fighting crime.
Yeah, no, and then Flex, his next appearance after this is in the Flex Mentallo mini series, which came out after Grant completed his Doom Patrol run.
Okay.
And which for a long time was very hard to get because of it was tied up in a court case to do with the Charles Atlas.
Imagine that.
Yes, and it, I mean it had Frank Quitely art when he was a nobody, and so it was very sought after. Yes, and but it's been reprinted in recent years, and we will get to it fairly soon at some point. Anyway, over the page, we're back with the Doom Patrol. We're seeing the title Aftermath, and Cliff Steele is in a new body.
Hooray!
Hooray! And it's a bit heavy metal on the arms and the neck. He's got ear antennas. He's wearing a t-shirt that says, turn on, tune in, drop dead. It's confusing. Yeah. And he's this is a new body that the chief has given him to replace that crap body that chief never misses an opportunity to put down Will Magnus's work on his previous bodies. So, you know, he's saying that Cliff can see an X-ray now and he can feel things. And he's... He said, why don't you take your body for a spin by moving these boxes for me?
Yep, I love Cliff's response. Sure thing, Chief. The more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah, and then he's off carrying a box downstairs, and it says this way up, and it's got the wrong way. It's fragile, of course. And he sees Dorothy coming up the stairs, and he asks, "Do you like my new body?" And she says, "It's nice, Mr. Steele." But she's very distracted, and she goes to her room, you know, shuts the door, and behind her there's the reflection of the Candlemaker, the being she summoned to solve all the problems under the Pentagon. And it stares at her, and she turns around, sees it, and then she says, "Go away, leave me alone," sits in the corner in the fetal position saying, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry." So fairly traumatized. Mm. Yeah.
Yes.
And our tour around the team continues with Joshua and Chief, and they're getting ready to move into Danny the Street because Chief decided that would be their new headquarters. But the chief is saying that he's still going to keep the place for the lab. And he says, I've got enough important research to keep going. And Joshua asks, what kind of research would that be? And Chief very distinctly says, private research, Joshua, private research.
You would hope to God that is ringing alarm bells in Josh's head right there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Chief is a prickly old fellow at the best of times, so this is just, I guess, more of the same to Joshua. On Downing Street, Cliff is there, and he's still trying to get opinions on his new body, so bumps into Crazy Jane, and Jane's sort of, she's got sort of porcelain-type makeup on and such. Mm-hmm. A bit of Clockwork Orange eyelashes going, yeah, and cocking her head to one side. And he said, "What do you think of my new body?" And she says, "I don't care. I don't care what your body looks like. I like you for who you are." Oh. And then she says, "I've been working on a logo for the Doom Patrol, just in case we might want one." And she says, "What do you think?" And she holds up a, it's like an eye with a circle on it. But you could see there's a D and a P in there. And she's pointing all that out and says it's also masculine with a 1 and a feminine 0. And when you combine them in binary notation, you can generate all the numbers of creation. And this is what Chris Sabella has tattooed on his arm.
True. Yeah.
True. So not quite as nice as mine, but pretty good.
Yeah, it's oh, look, it's on a completely different scale, yours. Oh. How could you compare any Doom Patrol tattoo to yours after you've got it now? You've set the bar.
Yeah. If I had any one regret, I'd like it to have been spelt correctly, but, you know, it's a tattoo. You can't always get these things right.
Yeah, look, you know, look, surely they can fix it up somehow. You see all those reality TV shows about people getting tattoo disasters fixed up? Maybe we'll see you on TV one day.
Yeah, hopefully.
Anyway,
yeah. So Cliff and Jane continue their chat, and he's getting very personal and say, "You don't care about my body." And she said, "Yeah, I did mean that. Shall we go somewhere and talk?" And she said, "Danny, can you take us somewhere nice?" And Danny, because he's a sentient street who can move around the world at whim, takes them to this sort of woodland area. They exit the street. And, yes, they're going to talk. Then we get a scene change, and it's actually captioned as the channel changes, and it looks like somewhere European, like Verona or somewhere like that. And there's a white cloaked figure moving through the streets, and he comes to a door that says Curadia. Did you like the little inflection I put on that?
Very nice.
Yes, and he knocks on the door, and someone says, "May I have your name?" And then he just holds up one finger, and the butler, I presume, says, "Oh, of course. Please do come in, Dr. Silence." Back to Cliff and Jane. So Cliff's going, "Is this Scotland or Ireland or someplace?" And she says, "I don't think so. I think Danny knows about places that aren't on the map." And Cliff he becomes aware that he can feel with this body. So he can feel the wind on his skin, and you know, he can taste the salt. So it's much more sensory enabled than previously he's had.
Nice work, Chief. Nice work.
Yeah, but we get the impression that Cliff is not feeling particularly happy. Yeah, but and Jane is very talkative, whoever this personality of Jane's, and talking about a new personality has emerged. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and because Cliff went in the underground and saved her, there's a new personality that this one is the first one to ever be based on love instead of cruelty. Which, you know, the abuse that Jane's gone through is really scarred her, but, you know, there's been real change. But, you know, as she's saying this, we're getting close-ups of Cliff's face looking very impassive and unemotional.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think Cliff is actually thinking about his plight of, you know, he is a brain inside a robot body and can't, you know, there's things he can't have in life. And it looks like Jane is about to say, you know, she's babbling and then she says, I'm just trying to tell you in my own stupid way, her hat blows off and goes down, down the cliff.
Of course it does.
Ending the conversation.
Yeah.
And then we get two pages of black and white slice of life scene. So there's a six-panel grid on each page. Mm-hmm. So we see a window washer. We see a close-up of a sink. Someone is sitting in a gutter. Someone watching TV. Street lamps. A cat asleep. Someone peeling a potato. Traffic light. A couple making love. A girl with a horse. But they're all captioned with who. And in the third last panel said, who is number? And the last panel shows a carton of eggs. Who is number none? I don't know.
Future plot thread, I dare say.
Perhaps delivered, I would hope.
Delivered in Morrison's unique style.
Yeah. Back at the Doom Patrol headquarters, the former headquarters that they're moving out of, we see that Chief is in front of his monitor looking at some sort of fractal pattern on the screen. And Rebus approaches, says, Professor Calder. He says, is there anything I can do for you? I'm rather busy right now. And Rebus says, yes, we must sit down together sometime and talk when you are no longer busy. I'm very interested in the work you've been doing. I understand that you've advanced the possibilities of nanotechnology further than any other current researcher. And we get a wide shot and we can see that, yes, Chief has a giant swimming pool in his lab now.
Of course.
And he says, yes, it's almost finished. It's a colloidal supercomputer. It's completely operational. It will make even the most sophisticated Cray machine look like a child's abacus by comparison. Ever humble, isn't he?
I'm going to call it
Think Tank. And then Reba says, I know what you're planning, Professor Calder. I have known for quite some time. And the Chief says, and what do you intend to do? Stop me? And Reba says, I may have to. We'll see. And the Chief says, of course. Would you like a piece of chocolate, Rebus? Why, thank you, Professor Calder. I don't mind if I do. So we go to menace to normality in one panel.
It's all very civil. Yeah.
Yes. Back in this unnamed European country, we see that Dr. Silence is being led through a... it's like a antique shop with lots of weird things covered in drapes and hanging stuff. It's a lot of busy knick-knackery.
Interesting phrase, but yeah, that's okay.
A yeah, anyway, work. Yes. Mr. Girardia is explaining that he, under normal circumstances, no one would ever get to see this stuff before an auction, let alone buy it. But because of the generous gift to my wife, I'm prepared to break the club rules. And he leads him to a draped thing in the corner, and he says, "Voila!" And we see a very close-up of Dr. Science's eye, and he says, yes, oh yes. Anyway, back to Cliff and Jane. Jane's saying, Cliff, we're not alone in this world. We don't have to be. And he says, look, you're talking to the wrong guy about hope. Life's hard enough, Jane, without bringing hope into it. I mean, you're crazy, but there's always a chance that you'll get well. I'm never going to have flesh and blood again. It's got so I don't even dream that I've got a human body anymore. It's he's just getting by, isn't he?
Yeah, it's a bit angst. I can't really recall Cliff ever being this angsty with one specific person, but I'll talk more about that later. It's a nice scene, but yeah, it's not exactly happy.
Yeah, and Cliff goes on, I'm doing my best to live with what I am, but I'm not good or special or any of that shit. If you met me before my accident, I wouldn't have given you a second glance. You can't help me, Jane, really. And then Jane says, Cliff, oh, the metal's warm, as she touches him. Look at me, Cliff. Listen, Love means nothing at all. Life means nothing at all. What?
Yep.
The worst deep pep talk ever.
Well, look at who it's coming from.
Yeah. Yeah, they're really a couple of broken people, aren't they?
Mm, yeah.
But she looks so hopeful as she says it. It's very weird. Yeah. Anyway, we see that back in other place, the cloth has been lifted off the item, and Dr. Silence is looking at the painting where all the colours have sort of bled into one another. And I believe from the easel that it's sitting on that this must be the painting that ate Paris.
Good God.
The auctioneer is saying, I've never seen you interest the slightest interest in abstract art before. And he says, I absolutely loathe abstract art, but this is something quite different.
Isn't it just?
Subplot for the future.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Cliff and Jane are now back inside the headquarters, and they're saying that, you know, we'll still be friends, and you know, nothing's going to change that. And then they hear crying, and Larry is curled up on the floor crying. And they both, you know, Cliff runs up and, what happened, Larry? What's wrong? And he said, nothing. I'm perfectly all right, Cliff. I was just practicing. And then an alarm goes off, and Cliff runs, and he smashes through a wall, because that's what Cliff does.
That's what a robot man does, damn it.
Yeah. And he asks the chief if he's okay, and he says, for the moment, thank you. And then security's been breached again. Look. And we hear bong. What do you make of that? Bong. And there is a character who's basically a cross between a person and a cathedral and a clock.
Yeah.
He's got a cathedral head with a clock face, and he's got like a cathedral window body where you can see inside there's a skeleton.
Yeah.
And he's wearing robes and surrounded by globes, and he's bonging. And that's where the issue ends.
Thoughts? What do you think of it?
It's interesting. It's a very interesting story, and it sort of you can see that it's building up themes for the future. So I guess one of the things that the Doom Patrol are a team of damaged individuals who have extreme problems. And
yeah.
I mean, this was sort of glossed over in previous versions of the team, but here it's front and center. And, you know, there's a psychological toll on Cliff. You know, Jane has extreme problems. And, yeah, as they interact, they really, you know, they're not well equipped to help each other particularly, are they?
Not entirely, no. No.
Yeah. And I guess in previous comics we've seen, you know, Chief has sewn a dog's head to another dog. So he's always been a bit of a creep.
Yeah.
But, in this issue, I think there's deliberate turning up the volume on his menace a little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much so.
So yeah. Maybe that will have some impact in the future. Perhaps.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yes, and we see Rebus, who's, you know, continually detached, and, you know, he's aware of something up with Chief, but he's not sharing that with anyone else. And he's, you know, indulging in his own explorations of, you know, what it's like to sit and cry and things like that, just, you know, to experiment. It's not... Yeah. So his detachment from humanity... Yeah, it's probably, yeah, it would be something if he would share some of what he knows with the team, but, you know, he doesn't think that way. You know, he doesn't think that people can benefit from what he knows. He's just, it's interesting for him to know it.
Yeah. I thought it was, yeah, it's an interesting issue. It's, but it's, as we said, it's kind of wrapping up the previous arc with the Pentagon and the Ant Farm storyline and giving most of the characters we saw there a happy ending. And yeah, it's bridging the gap to the next big event that happens. And yeah, there's a few different things going on with like the bizarre two pages of six panels asking who is number none. So, you know, that's it's kind of whacking you over the head with it. Yeah, the chief with his think tank, and that being his private research, Dr. Silence and the painting that ate Paris, or what's left of it. That's kind of worrying. But my favorite part would probably be the interaction between Cliff and Jane, because, as you said, they're completely damaged people, and they can't function like normal people can, like you or I or our friends can. They've been so messed up, and it's clear that Jane kind of has feelings for Cliff, or her new personality, Liza, does. When Liza is telling Cliff that, you know, she has emerged from Cliff's actions and from him going into her underground and, you know, rescuing Jane and all he's done for her, and that's what's brought around the emergence of this Liza personality, which is, as we read, she's born of love, which is something completely new and different for her, which is just, it's such a interesting relationship in that they're so messed up, but there's clearly feelings between them there. And even though they'll never go further than a friendship, as far as we know, it's such a nice thing to see that there is a bit of hope within the team there, or that part of the team at least anyway. So that there was probably my favorite part of this whole issue. I mean, yeah, the little plot hints are nice, and the appearance of the candle maker in Dorothy's mirror, that was freaky as hell, and that's going to be a fun storyline when we get to that. But yeah, Jane and Cliff, they were great in this issue.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a good issue. I mean, there's about four future stories all threaded in, or future significant plots.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't wait till we get to them all. It'll be good.
Yes. Ooh. And we did one issue this week just because at this point in Grant Morrison's run, the concepts are getting heavier and denser, and you can't really do them justice by racing through and, you know, bundling up a few issues at a time at this point.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we just sound like idiots.
Well, we wouldn't want that.
More like idiots.
Come on now. It's not that bad.
Yeah. But, I mean, lovely art by Richard Case throughout.
Definitely, yeah.
Throw that in. Mm. And Mark McKenna on the inks. Yeah, there's lots of faces and different impassive faces at some point.
Yeah.
Right, doomsplaining done. Now, we have a special announcement about something coming up on the show, and it's sure not just our show. A few of us on Twitter, I think Dr. Ant started this by rereading JLA Year One, and we got...
So he's the one.
He is the one. Dr. Ant is the one to blame for this. Yeah, but we thought, you know, wouldn't it be good to cover JLA Year One? And, you know, you and I, we're a little bit lazy, aren't we? Well, I'm a bit lazy, so I don't want to do 12 issues of a comic. So I thought it'd be good if let's do a crossover with a few other podcasts, because that's the great thing about JLA Year One. It's got the Doom Patrol in two issues, but the rest of it, it has like all these Justice League members. So, you know, you've got a bit of Green Lantern, and you've got Black Canary, and you've got The Flash, and who else is in the team? Superman isn't in the team.
No, but, he's not.
He's not, but yeah, Aquaman.
Yeah. Yes, Aquaman.
Well, man.
Does make an appearance. Anyway, yes, this crossover. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, and we reached out to our friend Shag, the Irredeemable Shag from Fire and Water podcast, and said, would you like to help us put together a promo so we can tell everyone about it? And he sent it to us, so let's have a listen.
Here we go.
What the?
G'day, mate. Back in 1994, Mark Waid, Brian Augustin, and Barry Kitson began exploring the beginning of the world's greatest superhero team over an epic 12-issue comic maxi series. And crikey, this comic was a beaut. you come from a land down under? That team was the Justice League of Australia, and that comic was JLA Year One. 2016, a number of podcasts will come together to cover this series in a single month. That month is JL Mate. Featuring the Dundee cast, the Steve Irwin cast, Tasmanian Devil, the only Australian superhero cast, Koala Bears and their odd popularity in the 1970s, the Sydney Opera House, Every Animal on This Continent Can Kill You podcast, and Why Are All Australian Actresses Drop Dead Gorgeous podcast. Each podcast will cover one or two issues of JLA Year One, and then the coverage will move from show to show. It all starts with the Fire and Water podcast with issues 1 and 2. That's a fair dinkum. JL Mate, an epic month for an epic series. And Stroth, sit back, enjoy, and throw another shrimp on the barbie. Good on you, mate.
What the hell was that?
Bloody hell.
That's... I've heard of a lot of offensive stuff in my time, but that's just wow. That's, I did you know about that?
No, that's shag.
Jeez, I'm having second thoughts about this whole thing now. That's really embarrassing for hang on a minute. I've just reread his email. There's actually a second promo in there. Let's shall we play that one and see if it's any better?
Hope it's not worse.
Oh God, here we go. And when the evening comes,
we smile. So in 1994, Mark Waid, Brian Augustine, and Barry Kitson began exploring the beginnings of the world's greatest superhero team over an epic 12-issue comic maxi series. And yes, we've just begun. That team was the Justice League of America, and that comic was JLA Year One. In 2016, 8 podcasts will come together to cover this series in a single month. That month is JL May. Featuring the Fire and Water Podcast, The Power of Fishnets, Waiting for Doom, The Lantern Cast, Supermates Podcast, The Idlehead of Diabolu, Comic Reflections, and Views from the Long Box. Each podcast will cover one or two issues of JLA Year One, and then coverage will move from show to show. It all starts in the Fire and Water Podcast with issues 1 and 2. Yes, we've just JL May, an epic month for an epic series. Available where you find all good podcasts.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's a lot better.
If you like the Carpenters, sure.
Okay, so that's coming up for us in a few weeks. So yeah. I think episode 57, perhaps?
Or is it 56?
It's the 12th of May. No, it'd be 57. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We'll tell you when it's on.
Yeah, we'll keep playing the more appropriate promo to remind people as we get closer. God, I'm going to have words with Shag, honestly.
Yeah. What a tool burger.
Oh, God. Let's check the mailbag.
Okay.
A secret governmental organization operating behind the scenes. Task Force X.
Task Force X is an off-the-books government strike team made up of convicts with no hope for release, serving as expendable agents for impossible missions. Succeed, and I'll shave time off your sentences.
If we don't,
you'll be dead. Any other stupid questions?
The Suicide Squad, ran by Amanda Waller.
I'm Amanda Waller. I'm here to indoctrinate you convicts into our special forces.
And there's Checkmate, ran by Harry Stein. This is the tales of DC Comics, Suicide Squad, and Checkmate. Mostly monthly from Headspeaks. Available on iTunes under Task Force X and under Headcasts over at headspeaks.com. We can also be found on Facebook and Google Plus under Task Force X. Task Force X. Check it out, or you'll answer to the wall.
Nobody screws the wall!
Last week on the Mailbag, Doom, we wanted to know, what's your favourite celebration in comics? Because it's a bit of a celebration ep for us, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. Anyway, so we heard from Jefferton from Texas, who's at Newish Universal, and he said North Star's Wedding and the Young Avengers New Year's Eve issues.
Oh, cool. I don't know what happened in those Young Avengers issues, but North Star's Wedding was a big deal, definitely, yeah. Yeah. We heard from Aaron Long at Juice005, and he said, X-Factor issue 221. You know the page I mean. Everyone does.
I don't.
All I know about that issue is that Wolfsbane was pregnant in it, so they have a baby shower.
I don't know.
Maybe she gave birth? I don't know.
Don't know. It's like an in-joke. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh. Aaron, honestly. Anyway.
We heard from D. Zaviza, Doug, and he's called Zaviza Patrol this week. And he said, JLA, JSA getting together for Thanksgiving in Virtue and Vice. The legacy stuff from DC, fun. That's the two teams to get together and they have a meal. And everyone brings stuff. I think Green Arrow makes his chili. And he said, no, wait a minute. The East Coast, West Coast Avengers in Avengers Annual 15. Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Okay. There must be a get-together between two coasts of Avengers.
Yes, it sounds like it. We heard from Rift at Rift 1821. And he said, the wedding of Jean Grey and Scott Summers because, you know, I actually have that issue. Right.
Good. We heard from at Astrakis 1, Milkier Wet Nave Tech. This is Kevin, our good friend. And he said, Donna and Terry's wedding in Tales of the Teen Titans 50. Great example of Mento being the world's fifth richest jerk too.
Now I actually want to read that.
Though, mind you, Terry's a bit of a creep too.
Oh, is he?
He is.
Poor Donna. We heard from Ange at Dr. Ange 70, and his submission was The Kryptonian Day of Truth, which I'd never heard of before, but apparently it's to mark the anniversary of Val Lor's death with a holiday, a day on which they speak nothing but the truth, just as Val Lor did.
Oh, sounds like a family get-together we have.
Right.
We have from at Charming Red, Moms Read Comics, and she said, how is everyone ignoring the wedding of Lois and Clark? They literally killed Clark to time it with the TV show correctly.
Wow.
Yeah. Do you know, I got engaged around the time that Clark and Lois got engaged in the comics.
Oh.
And by the time they got married, I'd been married for like 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well done. Cool. We heard from at Karthik Kakarala, who is Hero Word Elder on Twitter, and he said, I'll go with Astonishing X-Men 50, North Star marrying Kyle. Also, when Wolverine was going out with Melita for a while in Jason Aaron's run, and she somehow found his actual birthday, surprise, and that he had a provided us with a picture of the birthday party with Deadpool taking over and trying to lead a sing-along of Sweet Caroline whilst all the other X-Men sort of catch up and get together at the party.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we heard from Frack, who didn't get his answer in any time again.
Didn't Wilfred actually tell Frack to check the hashtag, which would give him the question?
I don't know why I bothered.
I don't know. But that's sad, isn't it?
Hmm. Yeah. Oh, well. Next time, Frack. Next time for sure. What about you, Paul? What's your favorite comic book party?
Oh, okay. I'm going festives with the Christmas issue. And it's Starman number 27 from James Robinson and Steve Yarl with Wade von Grobradger. What a great name. Awesome. Anyway, and that's a story where Jack Knight is on his way to a Christmas party and finds a man dressed as Santa in the snow who's been robbed and ends up bringing him along to the party. And it's just a lovely issue. And all the, you know, all these extended family get together and they discover that in amongst all these people, who some of them don't know each other very well, they've got someone called Faith, Hope, Love – no, Faith, Hope and Charity. And it's a charming issue.
Cool. The one I found that I really enjoyed is fairly recent. It's from January of this year. It's Spider-Woman issue 1. And, well, in this storyline, Jessica Drew is pregnant. And the party she throws is a maternity leave party because she's sort of giving up on the superhero life and taking a backseat to adventuring in the lead-up to the birth of her child. So they have a big rooftop party. There's a ton of Marvel superheroes there. They're all hanging out, having a great time. And there's a really nice sense of community there as well. And there's a really fun scene where Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, tricks Iron Man into asking Jessica who the father is, because no one knows. And she's sort of kept it quiet, and of course Jessica doesn't want anyone to know, so she zaps Iron Man and throws food all over him, and that's kind of funny. So,
oh, awesome. What yeah. issue?
The very first one, issue number okay. one, came out January of this year.
I think Doug gave me a code for that one. I'll have to give it a read.
I actually picked up the first 5 issues of this run just because I'd heard, you know, nothing but good stuff about it, and I had a quiet week with my pull list, so my store had them there, and I thought, you know, I'm going to give it a try. Lots of people have been raving about it, and I actually really enjoyed it. It's a really good, fun series, and it's got some interesting takes on being a superhero and a new parent and trying to juggle both worlds. It's very interesting and very entertaining. So, but yeah, the maternity leave party she has, which she's kind of not too thrilled about, but she's kind of doing it to sort of accept what's happening. It's good fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, that's probably it for the Mailbag of Doom.
And that's it for our show this week. So thanks, everyone, for joining us once again. If you want to get in touch, you can always have a chat with Wilfred on Twitter, who is at WFDpod.
Hello, humans.
You can always email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com or reach out at the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. And what have we got lined up for the next show, Paul?
We're going to do some classic old Doom Patrol from the 60s with issues 107 and issue 108.
Cool. Excellent. And do we have a question of the week lined up that maybe Frack will answer?
I don't know if Frack will ever answer one, but here we go. The next question of the week is, what's your favorite nickname in comics?
Favorite nickname?
Yeah, like the Scarlet Speedster or that guy.
Or was it Ben Grimm who was Old Blue Eyes? Or did he give himself that nickname? That doesn't really count then.
I don't know. That's Frank Sinatra, isn't it?
Possibly. I don't know. He had a comic, didn't he? Everyone's had a comic.
I think you're thinking of Jerry Lewis. I don't know.
Oh, dear. I think we're getting silly now.
Oh, good.
All right, we'll sign off for now. Thanks again for listening, guys. Happy birthday again to the Doom Patrol. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you again next week for more Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom.